Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the tense situation in Israel as three teenagers, missing for almost a month, were buried amid vows to make Hamas pay for their alleged murder. The former spokesman for Shimon Peres, Gideon Levy, an Israeli journalist and columnist for Haaretz, who has covered the Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza for over 25 years, joins us to discuss the bombing of Gaza and the likelihood of military strikes targeting Hamas leaders as Prime Minister Netanyahu continues to insist that the murders of the teenagers are a consequence of the recent unity agreement between Fatah and Hamas. Then, following Justice Ginsburg's passionate dissent in the Supreme Court's Hobby Lobby decision allowing the religious beliefs of corporate owners to trump the rights of their employees, we'll look into the possibility that an 81-year-old justice might resign before the midterm election, after which, if the Democrats lose the Senate, it will be all but impossible for President Obama to appoint any nominee of his to the court. Jonathan Chait, a writer for New York Magazine, where he has a recent article, If Republicans Win the Senate, What Crisis Will Mitch McConnell Cook Up?, joins us to discuss how elections have consequences, particularly when it comes to the Supreme Court. Then finally, we'll examine the consequences of the Japanese cabinet's approval of a change in longstanding security policy that paves the way for its military to fight abroad. We will speak first with David Kang, Professor of International Relations and Director of the Asian Studies Center at the University of Southern California, about Japan's domestic politics, where only a third of the country supports the move. Then we will discuss the foreign policy and regional repercussions with Richard Samuels, Professor of Political Science at MIT and former chair of the Japan-U.S. Friendship Council and author of Securing Japan, Tokyo's Grand Strategy and the Future of East Asia. And joining us now from Israel is Gideon Levy, an Israeli journalist and columnist for Haaretz and a member of the newspaper's editorial board. He's the former spokesman for Shimon Peres and now writes the weekly Twilight Zone feature, which has covered the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza over the last 25 years. His latest book is The Punishment of Gaza. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gideon Levy.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And in terms of the punishment of Gaza, it has begun and it will begin with a vengeance. I take it the funerals of these three teenage boys murdered while hitchhiking in the occupied West Bank have really outraged Israelis, and Prime Minister Netanyahu appears to be seeking vengeance. Is that the mood?
That's the mood, but I'm not sure that this will be the action. The coming days will tell if it's only about the mood or also about an operative plan. Right now, I think that Netanyahu, with all my criticism on him, understands the price of pushing it too hard. And hopefully, he will restrain those voices in his government and outside his government who are calling for a great revenge on the Palestinians, a revenge which will not serve anybody.
But it's pretty clear, though, that he has always been against the rapprochement between the Palestinian Authority and Hamas, who control Gaza. So he's brought that up again in this context. Hamas denies that they were involved in this murder. What clarity is there on exactly who perpetrated this and what their political affiliations are?
Until this very moment, we don't know really who stands behind it. We know two names of wanted two Palestinians who are wanted, but was it an independent initiative or was it a quite well-planned initiative? This nobody knows, including not the Israeli government, because the two were not caught yet. And in any case, I don't see any connection whatsoever between political steps and between terror. Terror should be handled, but it is the full right of the Palestinians to create a unity government or not to create a unity government. It is none of the business of Israel.
Well, what would explain then, Gideon Levy, the idea that these teenagers, and it's not the first time this has happened, could be abducted while hitchhiking? I understand that hitchhiking is quite common in the West Bank, particularly in this occupied territory amongst these settlements where I believe these teenage boys came from. So it's hard to understand the mobility and the casualness with which young people could hitchhike around a territory that in many ways is hostile because of the occupation.
Yeah, it was a very bloody reminder to those who forgot, and many of Israelis had forgotten, that we are dealing with an occupation, quite a brutal one. And we are dealing with occupied territories in which the settlers are really driving freely, while the Palestinians need authorization for most of their moves from day to night. And it is a bloody reminder to those who thought that this status quo will continue peacefully forever.
And in terms of these two suspects, these two Palestinians who have been named by the authorities as suspects, I believe already the home of one of them has been blown up. Is that right?
No, not blown up, but in both homes they had destroyed, they demolished one room as a promo to what might happen later. This is mainly to show the right-wingers in Israel that Israel is doing something and is taking revenge.
Again, I'm speaking with Gideon Levy, who is an Israeli journalist and columnist for Haaretz and a member of the newspaper's editorial board. He's the former spokesman for Shimon Peres and now writes the weekly Twilight Zone feature, which has covered the Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza over the last 25 years. His latest book is The Punishment of Gaza, and he joins us from Israel, where there is a fairly angry mood amongst the citizenry. Is there any voices of moderation? One gets the impression that the peace movement and the Israeli left is, shall we say, somewhat on the defensive?
Not only on the defensive. The Israeli peace camp was smashed a long time ago. So I must remind you that not all Israelis in it. There is quite a big part of Israeli public opinion who is still indifferent to anything which happens around, for the good and for the bad. And if you drive throughout the streets of Tel Aviv like a few hours ago, you could have seen thousands and ten thousands of Tel Avivians watching the soccer game between United States and Belgium rather than being preoccupied with the funerals. So there is also one part of Israel, or as we call it here, the Tel Aviv state, the state of Tel Aviv, which is quite far away from all those issues, for the good and for the bad.
Well, one of the reports I've heard, Gideon Levy, is that at the end of the day, this incident will result in more West Bank settlements. That does sound counterintuitive, given what's happened, but is there a sort of unstoppable momentum there for continuing to build settlements on the West Bank?
I'm one of those who think that it's quite unimportant anymore, because the settlers reach such a big quantity in which it's almost irreversible. And I'm not sure that it makes a big change if there will be another 1,000 or 2,000 settlers in the West Bank. We are dealing with over 500,000 settlers. And I think this train of the two-state solution left already the station.
So what is the alternative?
You name it. It's either an apartheid state or a democracy. And if it's a democracy, it means one state, one man, one vote. Very simple.
And that's a pretty tall order, isn't it, in the current mood?
Yeah, right now it's unthinkable. But as I think that the two-state solution was missed already, I wish I'm wrong, but as it seems now, nobody really thinks about it seriously. And the settlement, as I said, has expanded to such a stage in which it will be almost impossible to evacuate them. And without their evacuation, there is no two-state solution. So you are left only with the one-state solution. And then the only struggle, the international struggle and the struggle within Israel, should be about the nature of this state. Is it going to become a democracy, or is it going to become a South Africa?
Well, in terms of the surrounding territories of not the West Bank, but the countries around Israel, many of which are involved, Syria to the north is, of course, involved in a bloody civil war. Now Jordan is threatened by ISIL, who now call themselves IS, the Islamic State. we have a surreal situation here in the United States, Gideon Levy, where the architects of the disastrous invasion of Iraq are now all on television pontificating about how we should send troops back into Iraq, given that the Iraq, I remember talking to the Israeli military historian Martin Van Creewald, who said the Bush-Cheney invasion of Iraq was the greatest strategic blunder since Emperor Augustus sent his legions into Germany in 9 AD. What's the sense in Israel about particularly the possibility of Jordan being threatened? Because now Jordan has this terrorist group on both their border with Syria and their border with Iraq.
It is a source of great concern in Israel, and Israel will do anything possible, including maybe military intervention, to keep the present regime in Jordan and to guard it and to protect it. And Israel almost already officially said so, that Israel will not let the Jordanian regime to fall down. But one should see it in a wider context. In a wider context, as long as Israel does not solve the state of occupation, it will not be accepted in this part of the world. And therefore, anything without this will not solve anything.
And in terms of strategy, thinking in military terms, as long as you have that sort of potential for another intifada, which is what John Kerry, the Secretary of State, warned about on Israeli television recently, which got him into a lot of trouble, it would seem to me that it would be a military and strategic priority to settle the Palestinian issue so that you could then deal with external threats. Isn't that logical?
It is so logical that it is irrelevant, because as you know, in this part of the world, logic plays a very, very marginal role.
So, you know, Gideon, every time we talk, I don't wish to be a Pollyanna, but we certainly don't spread joy and light to our listeners, do we?
Unfortunately not.
So just to wrap up the current situation, there is obviously no light at the end of this dark tunnel that we're now going into. Is there any word from Abbas and the Palestinians about what they plan to do, particularly, say, if Israel starts pounding Gaza and tries to assassinate Hamas's leaders through targeted airstrikes?
Abbas said very, very courageous things in the Arab League, not in the New York Times, but in the Arab League in Saudi Arabia. But even his courageous words were responded by Benjamin Netanyahu with cynicism and with skepticism.
If, though, Israel starts going after Hamas's leadership, do you think that's on the table? That certainly is going to affect the unity deal, isn't it?
Yeah, but it shouldn't.
I mean, are there some Hamas leaders that that the Palestinian Authority can work with? And if they're targeted, what's the point of that?
They should be challenged. Hamas is not my cup of tea, but that's a Palestinian choice, not an Israeli choice. And Israel should try it, but Israel didn't try a real serious negotiation with Hamas, was not in the government. So it cannot claim now that now there is a new obstacle. Sure, there is a new obstacle. Where was Israel when Hamas was not in the government?
Well, Gideon Levy, I thank you very much for joining us here.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Gideon Levy, who's an Israeli journalist and columnist for Haaretz and a member of the newspaper's editorial board. He's the former spokesman for Shimon Peres and now writes the weekly Twilight Zone feature, which has covered the Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza for over the last 25 years. His latest book is The Punishment of Gaza, and he joined us from Israel. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back looking into whether Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg should resign.